Often the stories we remember are those that are told in a way that makes the ordinary seem kind of special, and there are few storytellers who do a better job of that than our own Jerry Apps. He's written many books, from novels that draw you into a small town life to memoirs of his own rich and interesting experiences. And in his most recent book, Letters from Hillside Farm, he shares the story of one family during the Great Depression and how they came to Wisconsin for a better life. It's both our nation's story, frankly, and the story of one young boy and how he grows up in a farm life that is completely new to him. Jerry, always a treat to have you spend time with us. Thanks so much for coming by.
Sure. Fun to be here, Larry.
Well, you could have covered a family story in the Great Depression as a nonfiction or as a fiction. You chose to write it as a novel this time around.
I did, because I could interject a few things that I probably couldn't as easily if I were writing as nonfiction. But in many ways, Larry, the story is my story. That's my life. So that part of it wasn't difficult. But I did dig out a bit of history on what the Depression really was all about. There aren't very many books written about Depression life on the farm.
Yeah.
There are a bunch on Depression life in the cities. But it was equally devastating in the country, but in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you chose to write this novel, which I found really interesting, as a series of letters.
That's the first time I've ever done that. And I thought that would be interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it allowed me to tell the story of George Struckmeyer, this young fellow who moved to Wisconsin, writing letters back to his grandmother in Ohio, where he had previously lived. But one of the things I wanted to do was to, through example, show that letters are still a way of communicating. To tell you the truth, we've lost that in large measure. And I thought this might be a way to illustrate, demonstrate what letter writing was all about. So that's another reason that I chose to use the letter format.
Jerry Apps, our guest today, author of many books, including his most recent Letters from Hillside Farm. Great to have him along. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Maybe, what do you know about the Great Depression? Do you have any stories that you might share from maybe parents or grandparents or maybe your own? Who knows? Are there stories of how your family had to adjust because of the Depression? Was there perhaps a move involved? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to have you do that. And as you said, you're in the book, George's family leaves Cleveland to try their luck in Wisconsin. And in those big industrial centers at the time were...
The unemployment rate was absolutely terrific. And George Struckmeyer's father, lost his job. And he had some farm experience. And thus, all of this, going back to farming, was not new to him. But his wife, little George's mother, and his little sister, of course, they knew nothing about farm life. But just let me digress for a minute as to why I would do write a book like this. I often speak to school groups, to fourth graders, and I will never forget the time I was talking about what it was like on the farm before electricity came along, because we didn't have electricity on our farm until I was in high school. And I will never forget this little boy in the front row. He was taking all this in. He was listening very carefully as I was trying to explain how barn lanterns worked and what kerosene lamps were all about. And he said, "Mr. Apps, if you didn't have electricity, how did you watch television?" Well, that said to me that we have a lot of work to do, people in my generation, to help those who come along behind us to realize that we did not always have electricity, and that television in 1938, there wasn't any. Nobody had television.
Oh, man. Well, the letters that I love the fact, too, I just should say, I love the fact that the letters were between the grandson and the grandmother.
Yeah, and that's an interesting connection. I purposely wanted to do that because often grandkids and grandparents have a communication link that's quite different than parents to children. There isn't the power relationship. I've got to be careful what I say because Pa's going to take will do something to me. But the grandparents will listen generally. And this grandmother is very sympathetic, and she's encouraging, and all the rest of it.
So that makes it. I don't know if it makes it easier, but it makes it more likely. As I read that, I thought, you know, a grandson would say this to a grandmother,
and he'd be very open and very honest. And share his feelings. At one point, he said, "I'm just had it. I'd like to go back to Ohio. I can't put up with all of this."
Jerry Apps, our guest. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. And what did they hope to find in Wisconsin?
I think if you would push it to the depths of the meaning that's involved, they were looking to survive. The father, did not want to see himself standing in a soup line. He did not want to be one of those hobos who traveled the country looking for work, as I illustrate in one of the stories in the book. And he thought correctly that they could survive, and fairly well, on a farm, because they would have something to eat, and they would have a roof over their head. And if they were a little creative, they could do some interesting things. And they did.
Yeah. And as the story, as you tell it, pretty much kind of the way it was. I mean, we had some chickens and maybe a little egg money there. And
they farmed with horses. And he had one of the agreements he had with his father. And they would have come no matter what, but the father said to George that you can have a puppy if when we get to Wisconsin on the great adventure, as the father described it. And so along the way, a puppy comes along, and there's a letter in there where he tells about how they had gone to the depot, and they had picked up this little puppy that had been shipped in a crate, and so they George named his puppy Depot, which is kind of strange, but that's what he did.
I love that name. I thought, well, that's a great name.
Yeah,
for
really,
a dog.
I thought it was good.
two consonants, Depot. Oh man, George's. One of the things that I thought was quite interesting was sort of his problems with almost like a bully in school.
Well, a couple of things.
That's pretty contemporary, actually.
Exactly. And I wanted that in there as well. One of the reasons for there are a couple of reasons for the bullying. George had, in an accident back in Ohio, had broken his leg, and it hadn't really healed well. So he limped quite a bit. And secondly, he was going to a country school, and he was the only city kid in this country school. So this bully picked on him all the time, because first he was a city kid, and what is a city kid doing out here in a country school? And besides that, he limped, and if you limped, by golly, there was something wrong with you, of course, and so he teased him about that. So that got to be a serious subplot in the story as to how he would deal with this bully.
Yeah, and you actually wrote about that in your own life, or your own experiences limping through life.
Exactly, except my problem was polio. But this is very similar. I had a very similar reaction from people that George has.
And that's and so George's story is pretty quite a bit your story.
Well, exactly. Well, I make no bones about that. I'm not smart enough to create these things out of whole cloth.
Oh man! Well, I think, and I like the fact that he talked to the grandmother about the bully.
Yes, and he's trying to find he's trying to find an answer to this. And I think the father, he would have said, well, just deck him. But the grandmother's trying to think of ways to help him get by this. And by the way, my daughter Susan is a school teacher here in Madison. And she was my consultant on this bullying thing. We together dug out a lot of the research on bullying. So that those responses from the grandmother are based on the research that we know today about how to deal with bullying. So I didn't invent those ideas. Those came from research.
Ralph in Little Suamico on line here. Let's go there. Hi, Ralph. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I was listening, and it kind of rang a bell, not personally, because, of course, I wasn't alive at the time, but my grandpa used to tell me and my uncle about during the Depression when they lived in Milwaukee. My grandpa was a mechanic, and, of course, when the Depression hit, people didn't have cars, or they couldn't afford to fix them if they did. So he lost his job. My uncle had just graduated from high school. Couldn't find work, and they had saved about $400, and they heard about a 40 acres and a cabin up in Glidden, and they just packed up, didn't even know what it looked like, and moved up there, and they lived there for 2 years, and basically traded with a local farmer for some pork and potatoes and things, and then they trapped, and they shot a lot more deer than what you're really allowed, but I think that happened at that time. And they would trade a deer for a hog or something like that. So it was a lot of stories that were very interesting. The cabin was basically unpeeled logs. And when I saw it when I was a kid, which was probably in the 1950s, it was just a pile of bark because the worms and stuff had just eaten up the logs. So it just was I wanted to tell you about that.
That's a great story, and that was not at all uncommon, especially here in Wisconsin when we had a lot of cutover land in the north that was really available for, and I'll use the word in a different way than it's officially known, as homesteading. They weren't really homesteads in the official name, in the official way. So there was a lot of that going on. People tried to make do as best they could. And even those living in the cities, most of them had a vegetable garden in their backyard, trying to grow their own vegetables. And so it was really a very challenging, tough time. And farmers faced it fairly differently than folks in the big cities.
Yeah. Ralph, thank you.
Hey.
I really appreciate you sharing that story with us today. Jerry Apps, our guest today, storyteller, author of many books, including Campfires and Loon Calls, Horse-Drawn Days, and Garden Wisdom, Lessons Learned from 60 Years of Gardening. His most recent is Letters from Hillside Farm. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30, so I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll be back right after the news. It takes not only a talented writer, but a keen observer to bring us right into a story and setting, whether it's fiction or memories. And Jerry Apps has done that for many years, done it very well. Lucky to have him with us today. He has a brand new book out for us to enjoy. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Jerry is a storyteller and author of many books, including Campfires and Loon Calls and Horse-Drawn Days and Garden Wisdom. His most recent book is Letters from Hillside Farm. And Jerry, thanks again for coming by today.
Sure. Glad to do it, Larry.
I really appreciate having you with us. You can join in if you have a question or comment. Hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we did have an email from Ralph who said, Grandma told the story of needing to borrow 2 cents for a stamp from her mother. Grandma needed a mail job application for her 20-year-old husband for a trucking job down south near Milwaukee. His experience for his application was likely his CCC duty in Cap Upson, Wisconsin. So Grandma got the job and they moved south from the timber and farm life of Tigerton to the life of driving truck, renting farms, and raising kids in southeast Wisconsin.
Yeah, the CCC was a very, very important activity for a lot of young men during the Depression who were out of work and were really down on their luck. And the CCC was very prominent in Wisconsin. That's a whole other story, of course.
Yeah, but a whole other story. And actually, I happened to be in Arizona. We visited Colossal Cave out there, and that was all of the work done in that cave was done by the CCC folks. Yeah. So it was not only here, but across the country. And of course, Jerry's book, as we were talking about earlier, is really a series of letters. It's a novel between his a grandson and a grandmother, and the grandson and family have moved to a farm from Cleveland to Wisconsin during the Depression to try their luck here in Wisconsin, and that's what the book's about. And Lori in Sun Prairie.
Hi.
Thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, I'm really excited to tell you one of my favorite family stories. My dad grew up in Eagle River, a fairly large family, and his dad was an electrician, and during the Depression he had plenty of work, but nobody could pay him for it. So somebody gave him a large shed if he would take it down. And they had apparently a lot, or they purchased a lot, in the city of Eagle River. And my dad and a couple of his younger brothers helped tear the shed down, saved every nail, everything, and put it up as a house on the lot in Eagle River. And each year they made major improvements to it. The first year they lived in it, it just was a shed with a dirt floor. And the second year, they dug a basement out while they lived in the shed, and they added things to it. I remember in the early 50s them adding a bathroom on the first floor, and it was a wonderful house, and it's still a wonderful house. And I'm just always amazed at the creativity of people.
It's a great story, wonderful story. Lots of examples of that, really.
And people were people more creative then or not?
I don't think they were more creative. They just had to be.
Yeah.
When you are stuck, so to speak, and you don't know where the next nickel is coming from, and you don't know if you're going to have a roof over your head, if nothing evokes creativity, that situation does.
That'll do it. Ultimately, there were 8 kids living in that house.
Oh, wow. Really?
I love to go past it because it's still there.
And it's still there.
It hasn't changed much.
Oh, wonderful. Lori, thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, great story. Appreciate it. Ruth and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. My parents were married in 1928, and my father was from Waupaca, but they were living in Milwaukee. So he decided that they needed to go where people could pay them in chickens and eggs. And he opened a radio shop. He said, they won't buy new, but they're going to want to hear what's going on in the world. So that's what they did. And my mother raised rabbits in the backyard and banty chickens over the fender of the old car.
A great story. The mention of radio is an interesting one, too, because we, on the home farm where I grew up, we didn't have electricity until I was in high school. But we had a radio, and it was a battery-operated radio. So I introduced a radio into this story, a battery-operated radio, so that young George Struckmeyer could listen to Tarzan and Hopalong Cassidy and Gene Autry and Green Hornet, I think, and all of those radio shows that were so popular during that time and that I remember so fondly as a kid.
Yeah, and wonderful.
Well, when TV came, my father used to put the TV out. We had one of the first TVs in town, and he used to put it out on the lawn, and people brought their lawn chairs and watched TV until they could buy one of their own.
Oh, wonderful story, Ruth.
That's great.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Oh, boy. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Let's turn to Ray in New London next. Ray, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my dad hiring a hired man for $15 a month in the use of the bicycle. And we had never had a candy bar. When he got paid, he went to town. He felt so rich that he bought us all one. It was our first introduction to a candy bar.
That's a great story.
Things are really poor. I can remember my dad needing a horse collar, and the hardware store was going out of business, and he was selling it for $2. My dad didn't have $2.
Yeah, there was not a lot of money around. One of my uncles ran a meat market in Wild Rose, which was near our farm. And one of our treats on Saturday night was to go into his meat market, and he would give my two brothers and me an ice cream cone because we didn't have electricity. Of course, we didn't have ice cream at home. And I will never forget what a wonderful treat that was. And for 5 cents, of course, he gave them to us, but for 5 cents, you could get a big old double-dip ice cream cone.
Ray, thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate the call and the story. You may have a story, too. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You picked 1938 as the year for your book.
Yeah, that seemed to be a good year because it was sort of right in the depths, in the middle of the Depression. And it had gone on since 1929, when the stock market crashed. And had progressively gotten worse as the years went by. And by 1938, I think a lot of people were feeling, is this going to go on forever? Yeah. Of course, it ended with World War II starting in 1941. But in 1938, there was a lot of despair, and there was very little hope. Some of the government programs were beginning to come along, and they were providing a little help. But it was just it was a down on your luck time, and I have a story in the book, well, in one of the letters, where George writes to his grandmother to tell her about this person who had come by, knocking on the door looking for something to eat. That happened that happened to be a true story. Put it in a novel. But that happened on our farm because we were only about a mile from the Chicago Northwestern Railroad. And people out of work, men, would ride the rails from town to town looking for work. And I will never forget, and I tried to portray that in this story, this man who was so down on his luck. And he was a good man, and that's where people got tangled up often. They thought those who were riding the rails were people who were aside the law or something like that. That was not the case. This man that I talk about in this book and that I remember from my own experience was somebody who was looking. He was looking for a sandwich, something to eat. He was hungry, and he was willing to chop wood. He was willing to do anything just so he could get something to eat. That's a terrible commentary on what our society was like in the middle of the Depression, but it was so true, and it was happening all across the country.
Hmm. Betty in Oak Creek, thanks for calling, Betty. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I was born in 1936, so this was before I was born, but my mother always told about, we always were farm people, and my mother would always have not one garden, but a lot of gardens, about two or three gardens, and then she would can. And there was somebody in Kimball, that's Kimball, Minnesota, that they always boarded the school teachers. So she would sell them canned goods, like corn and beans and, you know, that. And, of course, I suppose meat, too, my dad would. But it was enough to pay the rent.
Jesse, that's great. Well, the difficulty that farmers had who had mortgages was to even just to pay the interest on the mortgage, to say nothing about making the mortgage payments. And there were a bunch of farmers who lost their farms during the Depression because there just wasn't any money.
Yeah. Thanks, Betty, for calling. Appreciate it. Nancy in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Well, Well, good afternoon. I lived on a 160-acre farm up in Marathon County, and we were kind of, the buildings were in the middle of the 160 acres, so we had a long driveway. We were the last ones to get our road plowed out. You know, you could hear the middle of the night, you could hear those big cats coming snorting around finally. But during the daytime, we couldn't get to school because you couldn't get out with the car, you know. And so my dad took the stone boat, which he used to clean out the barn in the afternoon, but he took the stone boat and he put fresh straw in there and horse blankets, and we jumped in there and he hooked up the horses, and away we went 2 miles to school, and we got there anyhow, just like the rest of them who had their driveways plowed out. And then we had a wooden floor upstairs, and I asked my dad one time, "Daddy, what are those brown rings on the floor?" "Oh," he says, "that's where I made my moonshine." And also during the war, when you couldn't, you had stamps for your gasoline, I remember those two barrels there, and you could get all the gas you wanted for your tractors, but for your car, you had to have, you could only use this other gas out of the other tank. Well, I'll tell you, the one for the car tank, that never emptied, you know, because it was the same doggone gas. And we had relatives that lived in Chicago, and they would come up almost every weekend because my mother was a marvelous baker, and she was always making, you know, bread and dinner, sweet rolls, and we always had a lot of meat because we had, you know, pigs and cows and stuff. We butchered ourselves, and so on. They would come up almost every weekend. Somebody would be there to eat, and they would, but my dad would need tires on the wagons, you know. Well, my uncles worked at garages, and so they could get all the doggone tires that they wanted down there, and my dad never was, he never ran out of tires, you know, because he always got them from his brothers-in-law. And then back in 49, my mom and dad were coming home from Wausau. They bought a new bedroom set, the first thing they ever bought on that farm. Everything was for cows and tractors, you know. And a drunk driver didn't stop for a stop sign and kill my mother. Oh. And I was the oldest of the six kids. Baby was three. My brother was four and a half. And I was 14. And so I took over at the age of 14. I finished my first year of high school, and that's as far as I got. And then I learned how to can and bake and cook and do laundry and all the things that my mother had to do. And but my dad, that marvelous man, raised us six kids on that 160-acre farm. And you know, we all grew up. We all had got married. We all had children. We all stayed going to church. My dad, I cannot say enough for that, saintly Frank. He was a wonderful, wonderful dad. And I miss him, but I'll see him one day again. And God bless all those farmers out there.
One of the things that some people know about me and others don't is that I teach creative writing, and I've done that for 40-some years now. And one of the things I do is to help people get in touch with their memories and write them down. And I hope that you will take some time and write down the story that you just shared.
God bless you.
Because it is something that your family needs to know, and I'm sure you've told it, but the extended family needs to know it. And you need, and not only should you write it and share it with your family, but you should put a copy of it at the local historical society, because it's a part of history, and it is represents what happened so many times during the Depression, and as you were talking about World War II and right after. That sort of thing happened again and again in the country, and people need to know about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Nancy. Appreciate it very much with that story, and I hope you take Jerry's advice. I want to give Joe and Prairie du Chien a chance to join in. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. When I was in fourth grade back in the early 60s, we had an assignment to interview our father about his life, and he told me numerous things. But one thing that really struck me was during the Depression in the 30s, his father, my grandfather, came home numerous times during the winter without his coat, and it came out that he was giving them to men on the street who were cold and had no coats, and it was a great lesson in compassion for me.
Wow.
That's a great story. That happened. That sort of thing happened a lot.
Oh, thank you, Joe, for sharing that. Oh, yeah, and that's got to have an impact. I mean, on the children or in this case the grandchildren, when something like that happens, a great demonstration of humanity. Dave in River Falls, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello.
And what's on your mind?
Pardon me?
And what's on your mind?
Well, I was just going to tell a little story. I used to have a men's clothing store here in River Falls. And in the 70s, the prices were going up on everything real fast. And I had a regular customer, a little old lady. She was just delightful, that came in and was buying bib overalls for her husband, striped bibs, because they had been dairy farmers. And so she said, I'll take three pair. So I went to the back room and I got them out, and she said, well, now how much are they? And I said, well, they're $19.98 each. It comes to $60-some dollars with the tax. Oh, my, she said, isn't that something? I can remember in the Depression buying these for $1.19. But, she said, we never bought more than one pair because we didn't have the money.
Yeah.
The irony is that now they were, you know, 10, 15 times as expensive, but she could buy three at a time.
That's a great story, and I have to share a personal experience, because during the Depression years, and I started school, and I'm giving away my age now, 1939, and I can remember that bib overalls were so very special, and I got two new pair a year, one when I started school and one just ahead of the Christmas program.
Ah.
Because my mother wanted me to look nice at the Christmas program. And so there I stood on the stage wearing my new crisp
new bib overalls. One more bib overall story.
Okay.
And it was, I had a customer come in that was a little testy with me because of the price of those bib overalls. And same price, $19.98, and he said, well, I can buy them from Saban up in New Richmond for a dollar less. And I said, well, you know, you're from New Richmond. I knew the man. I said, you're from New Richmond. Why don't you buy them from Saban? He said, well, he doesn't have my size. And I said to him, well, gosh, I said, if we didn't have your size, we'd sell them for $15.
And then what did he do?
I just had enough of him. Usually I was much more gentle with my customers.
Oh, that's a great story, Dave. Thank you so much. You know, that could find its way into one of your books down the road here, Jerry. That little story. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, there are a bunch of bib overall stories. I mean, they are classic. They're a symbol of rural life.
Jerry Apps, our guest, latest book is Letters from Hillside Farm, and is doing well?
Doing very well. And let me slip in a little commercial.
Yeah.
For those who want to know more about my books, go to jerryapps.com. Mm-hmm. JERRYAPPS.com. JerryApps.com. I have a website. All my books are listed there. Description of each one, reviews, the TV stuff I do, the radio stuff I do. It's all there.
And some more TV work coming up. You got a documentary, second documentary, and
yeah, I just finished the second documentary with Wisconsin Public Television, which will be aired in December, and it's all about what winter was like on the farm during the 30s and 40s, which is based on a new book that I have coming out later this year called The Quiet Season, which is all about farm life in the winter.
Oh, so that's our next visit. when that book comes out. Oh, Jerry, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity, Larry, very much. And thanks to everyone who called in. And those are wonderful stories. And I'm serious. I hope most people, everyone, you should write those stories down.
Yeah.
Those are wonderful stories for the family and for history.
Jerry Apps, author of many books, his latest, Letters from Hillside Farm. Great to have him along. Go to his site, Jerry Apps. What is it, Jerry Apps?
JerryApps.com.
JerryApps.com. And you'll learn all about all of his books. We have lots of great shows coming up, as always. Tomorrow at 11, we'll hear about the end of the 30-year experiment at Little Rock Lake on acid rain and its effect on lakes. And then the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research folks will stop by. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.